In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my little green man, my little gray guy, my man from another planet, the one, the only.
Hold on, I just gotta take a quick drag here. Travis Rats here.
Lots of smoking in the book we're talking about today.
And I know smoky comic.
You do. All right. So, folks, welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades. It's a book club, but with comics. And on today's episode, we have The Absolute Martian Manhunter, Volume 1, Martian Vision, written by Dennis Camp. Artist is Javier Rodriguez. Lettering is Hassan Atsmane Alhau. And we got a bunch of collection of cover artists. A whole lot of different stuff in here. We're going to dive into... So, Travis, we've been... This is Absolute April. This is the third book for the month of April that's an Absolute title, but the fourth Absolute title we have read this year, right? We started with Batman and Batmanuary, and we took a little bit of a break. In Absolute April, we've read Wonder Woman, Superman, and now Martian Manhunter. My question for you, before we dive into this book, what is your Martian knowledge? What's your Martian Manhunter knowledge? What do you know about John Jones? What do you got? Are you coming in blind? That's the question.
I'm coming in pretty blind for Martian Manhunter. I'm not gonna lie, I did do a little bit after reading the book. I did a little bit of, hey, what's kind of like the origins of Martian Manhunter, which I was quite fascinating. It's kind of like a Superman analog, and I guess the DC Comics, before the Justice League and before every other comic book had Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, they were worried that they were going to oversaturate the market with like Superman books and Batman books. So for like the early Justice League books, they needed other people to kind of focus around, and they didn't want Superman popping up in every book. So he really became kind of like a surrogate Superman. And even in the early days, the earliest versions of Martian Manhunter was more John Jones. So it's a regular human guy. And he kind of, in a lot of ways, kind of like this book, had just like the aura of the Martian. So the Martian figure would be drawn like an aura around him. You'd see the green head on there. So that little bit of research I did, I was like, oh, that's about it.
Yeah, I think I'm coming in the same. I think that's the interesting take on the book that we're going to have to discuss today is we don't have a lot to go off of. When we talked about Batman and Wonder Woman and, you know, Superman, we all know the origin. We all have heard the story. We've seen them play large roles in movies and TV shows. So we have all this background knowledge to see how the tale has been subverted by being in the Absolute universe. And our theory or our thesis on these Absolute titles is when you strip away or change up their origin or what surrounds them, they're the same character. I don't know that we're going to be able to have that same conversation with the Martian Manhunter. My Martian Manhunter knowledge is like from the cartoon, from like Justice League Unlimited and Young Justice with, you know, his niece on there, McGann. But I haven't read a lot. And I guess like he showed up in like, you know, that sort of Justice League International comic that I've read some issues of. But I don't have a lot of Martian Manhunter knowledge. Right. I know there's the green Martians and the white Martians. And that's a problem. They don't like each other. Right. And so this will be an interesting thing. We won't be able to rely on all the things we know about this character from other things. But I also think this book is so out there. That I don't know that I think this feels the most removed from like normal comics. And I don't know how else to say that, right? Like
well certainly. And I think that, you know, of the Absolute books, this is a little bit of a kind of outside the Holy Trinity, right?
Yeah.
If someone in a comic book store is going to pick up this book, they might pick it up for the art. They might pick it up because they like the absolutes and they want to see what's on here. They might be a big Martian Manhunter fan. But I think why this book is able to maybe go a little bit further and a little bit more abstract than the other books is because outside like the diehard Martian Manhunter or Justice League fans and the people who are really into like the Manhunter arcs.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I mean, we've been reading comics for a long time, Josh. And so there's probably few characters that we have significant holes in, like, oh, I don't understand like the ethos of this character. And so if we're kind of coming to it from that, unless you're maybe like a diehard, you know, comic fan, this might give these creators a little bit more opportunity to kind of remove themselves from what people might think of as Superman not getting too far off base or a slight twist here.
Yeah. So I think to kind of get in, I agree with you on that. Like, I'm picking this up. If you're picking it up at the comic book shop, I'm assuming you're picking it up because you want to know what's going on in the absolute universe, like you said. I don't know how many people are like craving Martian Manhunter, right? The art alone is a reason I would say, like, you see it as comic book store, you flip it open, you're like, yeah, I need more of that, right?
Oh, these covers are would pull me right into it, even if I was like, well, I would beeline for these covers.
Right. A very cool design, very cool artwork, very gorgeous colors throughout. Just like an amazing, just so many panels. I'm like, wow, that like there's just experimentation in it that I don't think we get in a lot of other books. But I think for me, let's talk a little bit about. So let's set the story here. So what we have is we have a detective, John Jones, who is sort of inhabited by the spirit, the mind, the aura of a Martian, quote unquote Martian, an alien presence. And he is struggling with this thing talking to him. And then he starts to see the world in a different way in colors. And then at the same time, the white Martians are invading, or the white Martian is invading the city that he's in, Midtown, and causing people to kind of lose their mind and fight and go wild and do bad things and turn evil. And so John has to team up with the Martian in his mind in order to combat the sort of negative energy and aura that's inhabiting his small town, right?
Classic buddy cop.
Classic buddy cop. One of them speaks in riddles. One of them's a grizzled FBI vet, right?
I don't think people understand. I think people forget that in Lethal Weapon, Riggs wasn't a real character. He was just the consciousness.
Murdoch, yeah. Murdoch. So I think like this book experiments with form and experiments with ideas. And I will tell you, like, there were parts that I'm like, I got to reread that. What's going on? But I didn't hate that. Sometimes in a comic book, I'm like, that's so annoying. But I would tell you in this one, I was like, what's he trying to say with this? What's going on?
Yeah.
I had to explore it a little more.
Where we usually don't talk about a book until we hit record. And I think I just said one thing after our last podcast. That evening I started reading this and I think I was like a half an issue into it. And I was like, oh, this is going to be an interesting conversation. And I think at that point I was like, interesting in the fact that like, I'm going to ask you a lot, what's going on. you gave a good broad strokes of the plot, what kind of moves us through here, right? We're kind of trying to save this town from this white Martian consciousness that has infected the mines and the weather of this town. And that is, you know, kind of the plot of it. But really for me is, I know we're going to talk art here at the end, but it's kind of watching John Jones descend into something. I don't want to say it's not madness.
No.
Nor would I hesitate to call it like evolution.
It's like an acceptance of of an acceptance of new consciousness, right? Like
yes, being
able to experience and see things in a new way based on having this Martian mind in him and accepting, like you continually see the Martian go like, let me in, man, open up. Like open your eyes, right? Like see what's going on. And you kind of see him get hints of that. And at the very end, when he opens up his consciousness to it, that's when they fully realize their abilities together. Right.
Yeah. Which is so interesting. You know, a lot of these books we've been talking about how, the lead character, I talked about, you know, getting emotional about Superman on there because it's like, oh, when you strip it down, this is that character is telling us about this thing in the world. Wonder Woman, for me, it was like, oh, wow, what great leadership characteristics. And this book seems to kind of be having a discourse with
being on mushrooms.
We had AI talk with Superman last week, and this really seems to be like, what is truth and what is reality?
Yeah.
Which certainly in today's, you know, social media AI world, there is this sense of, you could read this either like multiple ways. Is this a good thing that's happening to John Jones if we strip away the actual plot and it's a metaphor?
Yeah.
Or is it, you know, like a midlife crisis, or is it an expansiveness of consciousness? And is there hope that, hey, if we're kind of stuck in our lives, there can be this awakening and we can change the way we view things on here. So when we start doing a comic book about the nature of reality and truth, it can get real heady real fast.
Yeah.
And the art really leans into it. So as you said, there were times where I was like, I didn't reread as much. I was just kind of like flipping to the next thing. But I think I could read this book four or five times and still pick up new things.
Yeah, I think there's things that when I went back and reread something, I was like, oh, I didn't notice that the first time, right? I didn't see this panel or understand what the Martian was saying to him in that moment. It is this...
John Jones is a character when we meet him. Like, so it's called Martian Manhunter. We're introducing John Jones on here. Does he have any defining characteristics for you before he gets inhabited? Like, how did
before he like starts to realize it? I think it's this interesting tale of like a guy who's balancing work and family. And a job that you can't share a lot with your spouse about, that's going to continually pull you away. And so that's an interesting, it's very tropey, right?
Yeah.
But I think like it works in this case. So I think part of this is I'm reading at the same time right now, because you can't read this enough time. I'm reading DC New Frontier, right? So I'm reading the New Frontier, which has Martian Manhunter as a character in it, right? I was at the shop and I was like, ooh, it's the mini version. It's that manga size version. I'm going to buy it. And I'm going to read it again. And John Jones is a character in this, but he's a detective in Gotham City. And it's the alien shapeshifts into a man and has to pretend to be a man. So you get that fish out of water story about, you know, him trying to figure out what it means to be human. This
man
one,
the earth right, are easy, right. You know, that classic trope.
But this one is, this version is such a different kind of way to play with that idea. So instead of the Martian trying to figure out what it means to be human, you have the human figuring out what it means to be able to understand and see things that only the Martian can see. Right. Yes. So it's sort of like reversal on it.
You said something that really hit me when I was reading it. And that was my end. That was like, okay, this book is, I can relate to it. Is you were talking about, you know, dealing with work and like home. So when he gets inhabited, John Jones, he gets to see everyone's emotions.
Yeah.
And like to the point where he can't turn it off, where they're just swirling around him, right? He's constantly absorbing them. And that's having huge negative.
Just
wild pages on this. And then he comes home and he tries to relate with his wife, and his wife's like, why are you being so cold? And there's this sense of, you know, as teachers and stuff like that, we have to be in, you know, 8 or 9 hours a day dealing with, you know, sometimes hundreds of other people's emotions and dealing with their emotional states and navigating those emotional states. And it can be super mentally exhausting. And if you can't turn that off or you can't learn to kind of navigate that, then it can really start affecting your personal life where being empathetic and being sympathetic to other people's emotional states can take its toll on you. And I love in this, the arc of this story, we get to see him get, start being open to other people's emotions, then being overwhelmed by them. So at the end, figuring out maybe some sort of balance on like how to start dealing with it. And I was like, ooh, that's really good. We don't talk about the emotional exhaustion of, you know, these face-to-face interactions that we have to have where, you know, our environment is really shaping how we deal with people.
Yeah. I think as a character, I really do enjoy this sort of like both visual and sort of mental struggle of him trying to figure everything out, like getting hit all of a sudden with someone's emotions or the dialogue of like, oh, I can now read this person's mind. I know what's going on. That cold, calm sort of like detective look at it, right? Like as a detective, you have to detach yourself from the terrible things you're seeing, right? We have a friend who is who's a homicide detective in the city. And he's like, I've seen more dead bodies this year than you can even imagine, right? And I just go like, you have to detach yourself from that as a detective. And so you have to detach yourself from emotions. And he is being flooded with everybody's emotions. And that's an interesting sort of like way to play this. And the art style in this book that is showing this to you, right? That Javier Rodriguez is doing in this book is just a phenomenal way to show the impact of thought and the impact of emotion, right? So there's just scenes. There's a scene early on, right after he's infected. He keeps seeing the Martian everywhere, right? That color scheme, which I think is just a brilliant idea in this book, is the green with the red eye, right? So you keep seeing
the
green.
The primary colors next to the super saturated smoky colors is really
right.
Cool.
You know, he like holds up his lighter and he sees the Martian, the green with the red eye, the cigarette in his mouth. The red and the smoke is green. He is walking through to go see his boss and the gal's painting her nails and it's green with the red dot in each one, right? Almost like a pimento in an olive, right? And there's a scene where from panel to panel, it's the same panel from page to page, the center one. I think if you're reading this on the digital reader, it's like page 15. So page 15, you can see like that center panel of him at the desk talking to, you know, his boss. And then the next page, it's the same panel, but it's all tripped out and you can feel it, right? Like the anger and the sort of uncertainty of it, of understanding what's going on. And it's just a really, the art style and just the way the light and the way he does just flashlights and explosions and coloring in this, it's hyper, right? Everything about it is hyper. And I think it really adds to the surrealism in this book, right? Of new consciousness. What's the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, right? As a very sort of like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas vibe to it. As you know, he's tripping out, or however you want to put it, is he's like finding these new ways to see the world.
Yeah, and I think this is like absolute comic booking, right? I think is that what Scorsese calls like film at gaps. It's not absolute film, but the idea of telling a story in a medium and using the medium to enhance the story. So this story doesn't, this story as a plot it doesn't, I mean, it could maybe still work. It may be whatever it is, but it becomes art when you use all the devices of the media, the coloring, like you said, the panel layouts, the designs. So each panel becomes this enhancing this story. There's this beautiful panel where there's this kind of shooter who he we used to like know as like a child.
Yeah, that's such a cool scene.
Yeah, and we see
he's like seeing it from his mother, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And the bullet exits his brain, and in this kind of colored which would be like, you know, brain matter, it's all smoky memories.
Yeah,
that are almost like other artists like to pick like your soul leaving your body, but it really is the amalgamation of all your love and your trauma like exiting you, right?
Right.
And when he starts seeing the tactileness of emotions as something precious, not just something that we went through, but something that really is a part of us, the way blood might leak yeah. out of us, it becomes hyper real for him.
Yes.
And to a reader, or at least to me, it was so poetic. And, you know, we have all these images and these memories and these loves and this trauma, and it's all just in us, right? Whether yeah. it's we're conscious of it, and to see that displayed on art panel after panel. I mean, any of these panels, you could really take, frame it, and like I would walk through a whole museum that was like three stories and like a room for just each one of these panels, and I would be in heaven.
Yeah, you know?
I might have to take mushrooms, but like it would be really
cool. It's a gorgeous book. It's a really intricate idea, and I don't want to compare to other writers, but it almost feels like this book is giving that sort of Tom King, Jeff Lemire look at a character, right? So, like, you know,
vision.
Right, that vision story, or, you know, Tom King taking that character and putting them in a way to write a story that just feels different.
Yeah.
Or Lemire doing Animal Man, and the way that he did Animal Man, kind of dealing with the red and the green and kind of this otherworldly place. It feels very much in that vein of superhero comic. And not the kind of sad deconstruction of the Watchmen, not the sort of like superheroes are not good or need to be taken down a peg, or let's show them in this sort of gritty light, like, you know, Dark Knight Returns, but this sort of deconstruction of superheroes and telling a interesting tale with them that still has those kind of like old school comic book pieces of it, right? It's a green Martian fighting a white Martian, right? Like there's comic booky things going on, but we're telling this very interesting story that only certain writers can do very well. And this is the first of, so this is the fourth book we've read, and I've enjoyed all of them. This is the one where I got it. I have to know how he treats the Martian Manhunter now that he's gained this connection, right? Now that John Jones and the Martian are connected, I got to know where that goes and what does the story look like? Because it doesn't feel like a simple retelling or a different take on it. It feels like he has something interesting that he's trying to explore with this story.
Right.
And it feels different. Yeah. And it's got me hooked in a different way. Plus, it's gorgeous, Travis.
Well, what do you think about, you know, I would say about half this book, it's like detective going through awakening of consciousness. But then at some point, we have to bring in the antagonist, and we've got to kind of tie this back to something that is, you know, can have ramifications. So we do a white Martian, but then we bring in Darkseid.
Yes.
On there, right? Which is like, oh, when I got to that, I'm like, oh, okay, I see. I forgot. Oh, yeah, right. I'm reading a DC, you know, Justice League book, you know, and they're going to bring all these characters together, I'm sure, from the absolute universe down the line. So is this their way of like introducing these gods into the absolute universe? And are we getting a little amuse-bouche of the ultimate, you know, kind of phase one bad guy of the absolute world? Did you, when you got to that, was that was that kind of, were you like, ah, okay, I'm ready for this book to have some DC stakes, or did you just kind of want it to be more of that trippy Hunter S. Thompson kind of vibe?
You know, I think I was like, okay, you have to have something beyond the White Martian that takes place in this, in this book, right? Because that is your set piece for this six issues. Is it ends up culminating in this sort of, again, giant kaiju in the Wonder Woman book. We have giant ethereal spirit Martians fighting each other in this book over town, while he's physically fighting, the Martian is fighting sort of like the negative energy that's kind of inhabiting everybody's mind. So I thought that was really cool. But then I go like, okay, what do you do after that? Right? Like I'm going to tell you, this is something where I'd be like, that could be a real interesting, I don't mean monster of the week thing, but that could be a very interesting, like, I got to figure out what's wrong with this place now, or what's going, like, very X-Files, right? And so instead of being like Mulder and Scully, it's like John Jones and the Martian working together to figure out what's going on. And there's something both wrote about that, but also like, oh, that could be really interesting, right? Like, you get to do it in a different way. It's not a normal comic book thing. And so but then I think you got to go, okay, what's the next step? How are we going to get, because ultimately we're supposed to create the Justice League in the absolute universe, right? None of the books that we've read yet have brought them together, but we know, seeing previews for stuff, that Batman and Wonder Woman catch each other in their book, right? Like, we know that they're going to come together. There's a Green Lantern book, there's a Flash book. So you've got to get the Justice League together to fight someone, right? So Darkseid is the perfect monolith for that.
Right.
It's interesting to see, you don't really know what role he plays in here, except that as his consciousness is open, he's going, he's coming. Darkseid is, right?
Right.
Like, he knows it's something, but he doesn't know what it is. I'm not bothered by it. I think these have to be connected, so I see it. But I would have been perfectly okay, and I might be perfectly okay if you want to think about what's the overarching thing that's wrecking the world that him and the Martian need to figure out. I do like the breadcrumb along the way of like, we're not going to get to Darkseid in the next six issues, but we're going to sprinkle him a little more, right? Kind of like that Thanos sprinkling in the first, you know, phase of those Marvel movies.
Yeah, I really liked, because I got absorbed in like the trippiness and psychedelicness of this guy's journey. And then at some point I was like, okay, all right, I'm enjoying this, but the skill, the craft for me is like, okay, how are you going to make this a DC book? And bringing in that White Martian and that fantastic, like, over the city fight, which is so dope how they did this. So like, the Martian and the Green Martian and the White Martian are fighting each other, and they're going into all the inhabitants' heads and pulling out their fears and turning them into weapons. Like,
yes,
there was one where it was like the fear of the nuclear bomb, and then another one was like someone's lack of faith in
the government, so the bomb doesn't explode, right?
bomb doesn't explode. So it was this give and take, and it had to happen so quickly. It was like, it was almost like spells, like the way wizards might fight, right? Here's a being that's going to turn you into a frog. Well, here's a being that's going to have a pelican eat your frog. And then you're like, oh, here's this that's going to eat the pelican. And it just became like almost like a battle of wits. And I thought that was just a really cool weaponizing of that. But by that point, we'd introduced the White Martian and Darkseid. So I'm like, oh, we're in a DC all out battle royale, and then now we're back to the trippiness of it. I thought it was a really cool balance of this new interesting take and still grounding it in the DC universe. Now, trust me, I still think it has a lot of work to do before this character is ready to stand shoulder to shoulder with the other characters we've seen, the absolute, because right now they seem like different universes, like just different, like, What's happening in this world doesn't seem to be anything that's happening in Wonder Woman's world, right?
Well, I think we had that conversation where reading these through four books, they don't seem to be happening in the same place, right? Like, you've got Superman,
Wonder Woman, and Batman, and probably the closest, right?
Right, right. Like, because theirs aren't as interesting. But I also like that this is just some small town, right? It's that very sort of like, well, we're going to, it's Twin Peaks, right? Like, we're going to place it in the middle of nowhere. Or again, it's very X-Files. It's a small town in Wyoming where this thing is happening. And of course, like, no one's going to get drawn to it because it happens over like two nights, right? And it's not clear what's going on, right? It, because the battle for hearts and or the minds isn't clear that it's going on. So it's it is they do feel very different. I am interested in, and we won't do them for the show, but I am interested in checking out, you know, the Green Lantern book and the Flash book just to see like how they're all, how they treat these characters, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you're what you're going to do with your absolute journey, if you were going to like immediately pick them up or wait for to kind of like word of mouth if this one's good or wait for them to connect.
Yeah, I think
like you might just pick them up.
There's part of me that wants to finish the first volume of each of them and then decide which one I want to read more of, right? Like that Batman book is selling a ton, right? It is a huge hit for DC, and I know why. It's Batman. One, you put Batman on a book. Two, the art is ridiculous. Scott Snyder is Scott Snyder, right? There's not a whole lot of writers who pull people to a book, but it's Scott Snyder. And wild art, and it's Batman.
Rogues gallery in there already,
right? Like, so
you know,
I see why it pulls people in, but there's part of me that goes like, okay, I just want to read the treatment of the other two, and then go, okay, do I want any more from this universe, or am I going to wait? This one, Martian Manhunter, is probably the one where I'm like, okay, this seems contained enough and interesting enough. I want to see how this works now, but I'll probably end up waiting until it comes out in trade. I am interested to see, like, are we going to get an absolute Justice League book? Are we going to get an absolute whatever they call it? This show,
absolute justice,
right? We don't go and, you know, we're not folks who are like looking through comic book news, right? So I don't, maybe it's already been told that it's going to happen. Maybe it's showing up in the other books. I like to really dive into these without a whole lot of other knowledge, because I think one of the things in comic books is, because everything's so interconnected in the big two, you can one, spoil yourself, or two, have expectations based on other people's experiences with it. And I think
we've seen this with the new phase in the Marvel movies, right?
Yeah.
Is we're looking for the future. We're like, wait, how does this connect? Like, moving? Like, how does this get us to this thing? And it makes it a little bit hard to enjoy the next thing when you're like, well, but how is this moving us to Justice League?
How are we getting to somewhere else? But I think that's where I'm at. How are you feeling about, I mean, we've kind of talked about art through all of this, so I kind of want to switch gears to end it. I mean, we can just say it right now. The art is gorgeous. It's trippy. It's wild. If it's nothing else
about this book,
it is. And you had said like you could have a whole museum full of this. So I've added some stuff to my wall finally after having repainted my office and redone it like 2 years ago. And I'm like, oh man, I don't have any of these in physical copies, but there's a part of me that wants to go hunt down a couple of them for the covers, just to put one up, right? Because
it's, or a print, like a dope print of it, you know?
Yeah. So just very cool looking art on it. So I kind of want to jump to this idea of, after being in this absolute world, what are your thoughts on it? Right. I mean, we haven't read all of them, but we read 4 of the 6. Right. So from your 4 of 6, Travis, what do you think about this experiment for DC? Good, bad, indifferent? Would you like to see Marvel try? I mean, Marvel did this with Ultimates, right? But I don't think that they went as weird as they could have. Like, some of this stuff is very out there, right?
Yeah.
It's very different, right? It's not just, you know, oh, it's young Miles Morales as Spider-Man. And even that didn't happen right away in Ultimate
Spider-Man. That seemed more The Ultimates really seem more like a reboot or like a different like starting point for people as those Marvel movies are starting to take off and letting, you know, just the fact that the canon was too intimidating.
Yeah.
This to me feels more like a publisher allowing, you know, artists to experiment with characters.
Yeah.
And really, you know, I think, especially in the 90s, you know, and comic book writers talk about this where it's like you pick up like a Batman book and you're like, okay, you can't have Batman do this. You can't have Batman do that.
Right.
You know, he's doing this over here. So that means you have to connect that. He can't have a Robin because Robin's dead right now or whatever it is. So it's kind of like really the only restraint is it feels like there's a conversation being like you bring in a writer in and you're like, who is Wonder Woman to you? And like Wonder Woman's all about fill in the like the word, right?
Yeah.
Leadership, kindness. And you're like, cool. We agree with that core. You could do anything else you want with it. As long as like the publisher and the writer are like, hey, this is a core, which is like an abstract noun, attach it to the character. If the publisher agrees, you get free reign to do whatever else you want. I don't know if that's what they're getting, but that's what it feels like when I'm reading it is when I open this up, especially Manhunter allowed me to, showed me like how far you can go in an absolute book. You know,
yeah.
Superman slightly different, Wonder Woman not so much, but you know, but like Manhunter really felt like, oh, they're really letting them, you know,
yeah.
have free reign. So I do like the experiment. After reading these books in a row, I'd probably take a little break from the absolute universe. But we talk about this all the time, like especially people who read in trades and stuff like that. Like we're more concerned about who's the writer. Who's the artist and
yeah.
what's your take as opposed to, is this a good Batman book? You know,
I think we've seen
so much, yeah. like show us something different.
Yeah. I think I would agree with you. It's this feeling of like, I love an Elseworlds tale partly because I haven't been reading continuously Detective Comics and Batman for the last 30 years, right? I want to dip in when a story's good, right? So this is an entry point to, all right, start a new story for me. Tell a new story for me. What does it look like? I think that's why you and I have had this conversation, why I really dig those Black Label books, because it's an in and out. Tell me your take. Give me your story. Give me your adventure on this. And there's part of me that worries that instead of Martian Manhunter getting the Tom King 12 issue treatment, I've told you this very unique, cool story. It's going to be this, yeah, we've got to keep it going as long as the absolute world goes. And we've got to continue building on it instead of saying this is the beginning, middle, and end of this take, right? That's my only worry about this version of these characters is instead of just giving me an interesting take, we're going to spend however long building this universe, 3 years, 4 years, whatever. And we might not, I mean, I think the good and bad in that is there are ebbs and flows. This arc was really good. This arc wasn't so great. These three issues are really good. These next couple weren't because you're telling this serialized soap opera of it. When I think for me is people who read trades all the time, I really do like you to tell me a story beginning, middle, and end. And I realize that that's silly because this is comic books and superhero comic books don't work that way. Right. It's meant to be an ongoing thing. It's Days of Our Lives. It's General Hospital Forever. Right.
Yeah. Like second act stuff. Yeah.
That's just what it is, you know, that, but I agree with you. I'll probably, there's part of me that just wants to read volume one and volume one of Green Lantern and Flash just to like, say like, okay, I read the once, right? I'm in, yeah. I did it. Okay. I'm going to take a break and come back maybe in a year and see where all of them are at and go like, oh, that one ended or this one has everybody said that it continues to be really good. Okay. I'll catch up and see where it's at, you know?
Yeah, or is the line just discontinued before it ever kind of culminates in anything together?
Yeah, and that's what I wonder. Like, Batman's going to sell. So that one might keep going. But is Superman going to continue to sell? Is Wonder Woman going to continue to sell? Do people care about that alternative world as much as just give me Batman doing something cool. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is an interesting experiment in publishing to go, we're going to create an all new universe, but instead of it just being a slight reset for these characters, we're going to, like you said, we're going to allow artists, be that writers or the artists, the, you know, people drawing it and coloring it, to do something interesting, whatever they want. Keep the core of the character, do whatever else you want. I think it's a really fun way to treat this. I think this could have been an Image comic book and just not been Martian Manhunter, right?
Yeah.
You could have called it something else. But throwing Martian Manhunter on the cover makes me go like, oh, I know the rules of some of this.
Right. Yeah.
It's connected to the things I love. I'm in, I'm going to get it. Where I don't know that I would have read this had it been, you know, Image Comics number one, you know, space brain syndrome or the alien in my head, whatever it is.
We might have just because the art is so good. We might have been like, hey, the story's weird, man, but the art's great, you know?
Yeah. All right. We are wrapping up our absolute April Travis Ratz. We only read three, but best of the four. If you had to pick, what's your favorite absolute art? What's your favorite absolute writing that we've seen so far?
Art, this one, hands down. And I think the one that I think about, maybe this one might be thinking of the most, but I really liked Wonder Woman. I know that the volume that we read was kind of divided into like two different sections. And then we had a really cute little like baby Wonder Woman at the end, which I really loved on there.
Yeah.
So it felt most chopped up. But I really liked the take of Wonder Woman getting her powers kind of in hell. The kaiju battle for the first half, and then this kind of dip into the underworld in Greek mythology in the second half. I just thought that was really cool. It felt operatic in the second half, and it felt almost science fiction in the first half, and none of it, but it still felt connected. So I'm going to go probably the one I would answer the question is like, which one would I pick up tonight when we're done and read the next issue? It'd probably be Wonder Woman.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you on that one. I think the art for sure is this Martian Manhunter book. It's just phenomenal. It's trippy. It's cool. The colors are beautiful. But I think the story that I kind of want to see, the story that I enjoyed the most is also that Wonder Woman story, right? I think it really hit the core of that character in a way that felt like a great exploration of who the character is. Superman, I don't think we got enough of him yet in that first volume. Batman, like we talked about, this is the Batman that listens to Slipknot, right? Like, I don't know how else to, right?
We've
like,
already seen so many different versions of Batman that it was, it's cool, but like, oh, you made me interested in Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I really did. I really did dig it. And like I said, pardon me, it reminded me it reminded me of that new 52 version of Wonder Woman that I really enjoyed that run. I thought it was fun. But the art on this is fantastic. I think if I were to look tonight, like pick up my Kindle and go, okay, who's got a volume two out? I think it actually might be Wonder Woman. And that might be one I would go, okay, I'm going to go read that one. So we have zero books picked for our next run of comics, pulling back the curtain for our folks here. We are going to offline figure out what our May comic book club is going to be. We'll share it with you in all the right places. So if you are enjoying this podcast with your ears, you can find us on YouTube, Comic Exposure, right? Up here, but that you wouldn't see that unless you're on YouTube. If you're on YouTube and you're like, man, I like this, but I got to drive my car while I listen to them, you can find it on whatever your favorite podcast app is. We're on Instagram. That's where you're going to see the upcoming books. That's where you're going to see kind of our what we're planning on, what the next episode is, what we're reading, random stuff that I share on there. You can find it there. And then also over on the website, comicexposure.com. thank you for hanging out with us. Write a review, write us whatever. Give us a subscribe on YouTube as the bell. You hit the bell and it tells you when we have a new episode up. I think that's how it works.
Yeah.
And then it's a new experiment for us that you have to see our faces while we do this. We're just adorable people doing the show. So thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Folks, we will see you next trade.